Welcome. You are listening to Aftersight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for Opera News. My name is Keith. The following articles are from the March 2024 Opera with Opera News magazine, and we'll begin with Still Decreasing Circles by the Editor. Recently researching the outstanding Moravian-American pianist Rudolf Firkuzny, a lifelong opera lover whose early experiences as a child included attending the 1924 premiere of Cunning Little Vixen in Brno with Janáček himself, I chanced upon a program for a 1956 Chicago recital of his, full of eye-catching advertisements. Music lovers in the city were being enticed to hear the Vienna Philharmonic under André Kleitens, the Berlin Philharmonic, Herbert von Karajan, and the Metropolitan Opera on tour. The great violinists, Misha Elman, Isaac Stern, and Nathan Milstein, and cellists, Gregor Piatigorsky and Mstislav Rostopovich. Such magnificent pianists as Alexander Brilowski, Walter Gieseking, Witold Malchuvinsky, Benno Mosiewicz, Arthur Rubinstein, Rudolf Serkin, and Solomon, and singers including Nikolai Gedda, Elizabeth Schwarzkopf, Irmgard Seefried, and Leopold Simonot, with a special full-page ad reserved for the young Leontine Price. What a snapshot! But more than simply sighing at the realization that no one today could hope to hear such a lineup of great artists, it led me to reflect on the diminution of musical and operatic life in many cities. True, 1956 is a long time ago, and so is 1974, a year in which our pages show that Sadler's Wells Opera was still touring to 15 cities in the UK. Mind you, already in 1971, Rodney Milnes had written an opinion piece in this magazine titled Ever Decreasing Circles, which predicted the end of opera as it was then recognized within 20 years. If Rodney's Cassandra-esque warnings were a little premature, you only need to compare listings for the 1990s, when audiences were spoilt for choice, with those for today to see that something is indeed very wrong. This month's slender UK and US review sections are a reminder of how seasonal or not operatic life has become. Whether we are talking about Chicago or London, it's hard not to conclude that the depth and texture of musical life is diminishing. Lyric opera seasons traditionally featured 10 operas. In 2022-23, there were 7. In this season, there are 6. Of course, there are some compensations in the diversity of offerings the city lacked decades ago, courtesy of Haymarket Opera Company and Chicago Opera Theater, who with a sense of enterprise fly the flag for the unusual. Lyric seems to have followed the model of the ever-shrinking ENO in letting out its theater to ballet for chunks of the season, ill-advisedly, since opera is an art form in which quantity and quality often go together, and artistic standards, to say nothing of international vision, suffer when companies are less productive. London's dwindling status as one of the world's musical capitals means that programmatic ambition in opera houses and concert halls here is now a shadow of what it was 20 years ago, and big international ensembles think twice these days before coming to Britain. Or don't come at all. For its 14-concert European tour in January, the Chicago Symphony overflew the UK completely. Such shrinkage is, of course, slowly incremental, but if allowed to go unchecked, it won't be long before people wake up and find it's too late to fix. In London, this feels like being part of the bigger picture of a declining country that has become used to some of the poorest standards in Europe. Leaders of a music industry reeling from various shocks give the impression of being too exhausted to fight back. Does anyone else care? And now, Alexandra Kurzak by Eric Myers. Kurzak sings Liu at the Metropolitan Opera this month. Caught early on a Tuesday evening during the run-up to Christmas in Manhattan, Alexandra Kurzak is exhausted from the multiple flights she has just taken from her native Poland. Rehearsals are starting at the Met for the beloved Anthony Minghella production of Madama Butterfly, in which Kurzak is to star throughout January, with Liu and Turandot to follow in late February and March. She arrives bundled up against the cold for an interview at the Hotel Pierre, near the apartment where she will be enjoying a New York City Christmas with her husband Roberto Alagna and their 10-year-old daughter, Milena. Kurzak finds herself at a key moment in her career, an excellent time for an interview due to the inevitable questions that are now popping up around her like mushrooms after the rain. Long known as one of the opera world's major lyric coloraturas, the 46-year-old is now singing heavier dramatic roles. Not only has Cho-Cho-San become part of her repertoire, she has sung it in Berlin, Munich, Monte Carlo, and Vienna, but so have Tosca and Santuzza. Soon to come are Fedora and La Gioconda. "And I am also thinking about Aida," she states. "I'd love to add that to my repertory." Many lighter-voiced sopranos grow gradually into these roles, following the career trajectory of Franny and Scotto. But Kurzak has taken this leap rather suddenly over the past few years, and what's more, she continues to sing the coloratura parts that made her famous. She was a delicious Adina, one of her signature roles, at the Met just last year, and recently recorded Mozart's Queen of the Night. She is singing these roles now in a voice that is larger and has a richer, fuller bloom than before. It lends extra beauty and poignancy to her approach in Verismo operas, yet she also has chest tones to spare during Tosca and Santuzza's fiery moments. "I do not force when I sing any role," she says. With the voice in a good position, it can go through the big sound of the orchestra and it can carry. "It's about the color for me, if I have the warmth and the roundness of the voice. A colleague of mine told me yesterday, 'I was in your L'Elysir d'Amore, and I still don't know how you did it, how you delivered the role with a big voice.' But you know, a big voice doesn't mean you don't know how to deliver the coloratura, the agility. All these things come from the technique." Recently, she won praise when she took on both Netta and Santuzza in the Royal Opera House's Cav and Pag, a feat equaled at that house only once before by Victoria de Los Angeles at a gala, according to Kurzak's own research. "Of course, my voice has grown," says Kurzak, "and it is absolutely different now than it was when I started singing in 1996. I can feel how it has grown, especially during the past few years, because I learn my voice, you know. I learn my body. I know how to create the sound. I know which muscles to use, for example, with the breathing to make the sound more coloratura or more lyric. It's a different approach to breathing. The pressure on the muscles is different. For the soprano, the passaggio is different when you sing lyric and when you sing coloratura, and you have to cover the voice differently. This chiaroscuro, as they say in Italian. You need to have always the squillo, the ping in the voice, but you need at the same time to make it rounder, darker, to achieve the color you need for the role. Our bodies go through so many changes, the hormones, the muscles, that sometimes we have to rebuild and restudy to find out why things that used to work no longer do. It's constant work. Your instrument is a piece of you, and it is always changing just as you are always changing." For her success, she credits the solid vocal technique she was taught by her mother, the soprano Jolanta Zmyrko, who was a star for many years in Poland and sang on tour with other European countries outside the Soviet bloc. And although Kurzak has a PhD in music from the Academy of Music in Wrocław, a degree she acquired in 2009 through remote study while singing all over the world, she says that her mother has really been her one and only voice teacher throughout her life. She started, like me, with The Queen of the Night and Olympia. She finished with Abigail and Turandot. She made her Turandot debut at 60, so maybe it's a kind of genetic path that I have for my mother. With her tours outside of Poland during the Cold War, Zemirko found herself offered contracts by major Western European houses. Many times, she could have made the decision to defect. But her instincts as a mother were too strong. If I had done that, she would not have seen me for another 10 years, Kurzak says. With a mother who was a singer and a father who was a horn player, Kurzak began showing musical instincts as a toddler. She started her studies with the violin at the age of 7 and took required piano lessons as well under the socialist musical education system. After 12 years of studies, she went on to the Academy of Music in Wrocław, her hometown. "But I'd say my teacher was always my mother," she insists. "There was no competition. I went on to postgraduate music studies in Hamburg, where we focused more on the vocal repertory and language than on technique." The technique that she learned from her mother has served her well, and she would be happy to become a teacher to other young singers one day. Last season, she briefly dipped her toes into working with young singers. "And I found a big inspiration in this. I said, one day, if I cannot sing anymore, I can do this. I can really help young singers. One day I will come back to that, but right now it's just not possible for me to do both, to perform and teach." Kurzak began her operatic career on stage at the Wrocław Opera, playing Susanna to her mother's countess in La Nozze di Figaro. She remained there for 2 years before joining the Hamburg Staatsoper, where she stayed until 2007, singing such roles as Marceline, the Queen of the Night, Servilia in Cleopatra, as well as Fratra in Handel's Radamisto. During that time, she also began her long-running relationships with the Metropolitan Opera and the Royal Opera House, specializing in Mozart and bel canto roles. She went freelance in 2007, and by the end of the decade, she had made her debuts in many of the world's great opera venues, including Munich, Salzburg, Vienna, and Chicago. She went on to sing a wide range of lyric roles, including Violetta, Desdemona, Mimi, Lieu, and Alice Ford. But bel canto has remained a constant, and it was during a run of performances of Idina at the Royal Opera House in 2012 that she met Roberto Alagna. Sparks flew, and in 2015 they were married in Warsaw, between L'Elysée performances at the Paris Opera. Kurzak's previous marriage to the baritone Jacek Jaskula ended in divorce in 2007. Wrocław always has been home for Kurzak. "I have never left Poland. Malena was traveling with us until, when she was 7, she told her daddy, 'Je veux avoir ma vie, papa,' which meant she did not want to travel all the time. She wanted to be in school with her friends and have a normal life. We really had to put our roots down. And I had never really left Poland. Between travels, we would always return. So we came back, and Malena was happy." Malena speaks French with her father, but in this polyglot household, the lingua franca between Kurzak and Alagna is Polish. Now that Kurzak is singing more dramatic roles, often opposite Alagna, one wonders if it is easy for them to let go of their characters after a performance and enjoy a tranquil home life. Do Santuzza and Turiddu ever wind up coming home with them? "We leave all of that absolutely at the stage door of the opera," Kurzak states firmly. "I'm me again." Maybe why I love to be with him so much on the stage is that, during that hour and 20 minutes of Cavalleria, we are those characters. I really forget I am myself. The critics say there is so much chemistry between us. That chemistry was always there, from when we first met on the stage. That's why we became husband and wife. But at home, we never discuss our characters or how we are going to play them, because I become my characters on stage. I take huge inspiration from the orchestra, from the music, and it makes my movements kind of different each time. Of course, you have to keep the geography, the direction, but it becomes very spontaneous. Her two current meta-assignments, Butterfly and Lieu, appeal to her for reasons that some may find surprising. I love the vulnerability of Lieu. I like to see the fragile woman on the stage. I don't like to have to force people to see that the woman is strong, that the woman is, I don't know, equal. She is equal. I don't need to show it because I believe it. So I like to show the difference between men and women. I don't have the same force that men have. That's nature. This is how I see Tosca. She's frightened. She's scared. She lives in an artistic bubble and doesn't know what the real world is. I don't feel she is strong at all in the second act with Scarpia. And in the third act, if you are strong, you would not kill yourself. To kill yourself is not a sign of being strong. It's a sign of being weak. You have to fight in your life if you are strong, and to go forward, 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 not to kill yourself. Do you want to know a character who is strong for me? Gilda. This is a strong woman. Carmen is not strong. It is Michaela who is strong. When you read the novel, you see that Carmen is using Don Jose to kill her husband. If she was that strong, she would not use somebody to kill another man. Michaela is the strong woman. She comes into the mountains alone, against everything, against all the people there. The same with Gilda. And the same I would say with Butterfly. There is the fragility, but she is very strong at the same time. This is what is beautiful in this role. To combine these two things together. Butterfly kills herself, but this is a different culture, not our Western world. She is killing herself for honor. And Lieu as well. She is giving all her life for love, like Gilda. I love playing these loving creatures and enjoying the absolute beauty of their music. I am an enormous fan of Puccini. He is absolutely my favorite composer. Maybe because I come from the instrumental background, I feel like I am creating his music with the orchestra. I am an equal partner with the orchestra. Melding the sounds together, this is what I like very much with Puccini, more than bel canto or Verdi. Seen at the Met dress rehearsal, during which Kurzak did not mark but sang full out, her Butterfly was indeed an exquisite admixture of fragility and great strength. She shaped and colored the vocal line masterfully, from the soaring upper reaches of Act I to the gutsy, despairing chest tones of Act III, and interacted empathetically and distinctly with each of the other cast members. It was operatic acting of a very high order. And perhaps in that respect, the apple will not fall far from the tree. Milena loves music, says Kurzak, but right now what she really wants to do is cinema. Her first question to me about it was, Mom, what do I need to do to get an Oscar? And now finding the passion. Great singers in great roles. Carol Vaness talks to Roger Pines about Donna Anna. The American soprano, Carol Vaness, one of the foremost Mozart singers of our time, has triumphed internationally as Elettra, Countess Almaviva, Donna Elvira, Fiordiligi, Vitalia, and above all, Donna Anna. That portrayal, recorded for EMI under Haitink, has been heard across North America. At New York City Opera in March 1980, her professional role debut after singing Donna Anna in her student days, the Metropolitan Opera, and the major houses of Chicago, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Fort Worth, and Toronto. Her Anna has also earned acclaim at the Glyndebourne and Savonlinna festivals, as well as with the Royal Opera in London and on tour to Japan, at La Scala and in Vienna, Munich, Berlin, Paris, and Florence. Roger Pines, when did you first get to know Don Giovanni? Carol Vaness. When I sang Donna Anna in graduate school, my voice teacher had given me the score saying, "Look at these girls and see which one you like." I thought, "Donna Elvira seems to be the most fun, but who gets to sing high? Donna Anna." I actually picked the role based on the fact that she was on the top. R.P. Did any of your great predecessors influence or inspire you? C.V. Yes, Leontine Price and Eleanor Saber. For example, how they use the language throughout the role. They could also take certain specific and beautiful turns within the music that are quite difficult and make them sound very easy. I was always attracted to Leontine's singing. Even in just one or two sentences, she does 50 million incredible vocal things, but is also dramatic. One minute her Donna Anna is saying to Don Ottavio, "Go kill him." Then it's, "Oh, my poor father." Then, "Go kill him," again. But at the same time, you can still hear fragility in her. You hear that in Eleanor, too. I was inspired by the ease and purity of Eleanor's sound. When she was singing, she never had to go, "I'd better be careful here." It comes out in perfect balance. They were both perfectly balanced singers. Teaching my students today, I've come to appreciate that. R.P. You're one of comparatively few singers who have been successful as both Donna Anna and Donna Elvira. C.V. I first sang Donna Elvira in Salzburg with Muti, and by that time I'd been in enough Don Giovanni's to know how Elvira went. But I didn't give up Donna Anna. I just started to alternate them, but leaving some space in between. R.P. Your professional debut was as Vitalia. Did Donna Anna come next? C.V. Yes. After La Clemenza di Tito at New York City Opera in October 1979, they were planning to do Don Giovanni. They wanted me for it, but Beverly Sills, who had just started to take over as general director, said, "We'd better hear Carol in an audition." So, not too long after my debut, I walked back into the theater and sang Non Mi Dir. That production was directed by John Cox, who was also director of productions at Glyndebourne at that time. Glyndebourne had just lost Kathy Malfitano. She didn't want to sing Donna Anna. Peter Hall was in New York, and John said, "If you need a Donna Anna, you should come hear this kid." So within a week, I had my Glyndebourne contract for the role, but Donna Anna at NYCO came prior to the Glyndebourne production. R.P. Where does Donna Anna sit in relation to your other Mozart roles? C.V. Tessitura-wise, it's pretty much the highest, although take away Fiordiligi's arias, and she's actually the same as Donna Anna. R.P. How did you prepare the role vocally? C.V. To sing Mozart well, you have to have a steady voice, which means you have to know how much air and how much sound you want to sit in any place in your voice. We'll continue this article next time. Thank you for joining us for Opera News. My name is Keith.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.